You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, family? Thank you for tuning in to the Dream Nation podcast. My name is Casanova. I'll be your host, and I'm excited to be bringing to you entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and trailblazers from around the world. Stay locked in with us because we're about to go on a journey that will change your life.
What is up, Dream Builder? Welcome back to the show. Today's guest, we have the incredible Mr. Dr. Fred Moss. Fred, you want to go ahead and say what is up to Dream Nation?
Dream Nation, what's up? What's up? It's great to be with you this morning. Thanks for having us, Casanova. I'm looking forward to this amazing conversation with you and with our listeners. So let's rock this thing.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it as well. So the way that, I don't know if you've listened to any of the episodes, but the way that I always love to start off these shows is I compare us as thought leaders, change makers to superheroes. And the reason being is because we're constantly flying around the world, whether that means physically, literally, or even now, this is digitally, virtually through Zooms and like we're on right now. And we're putting on our cape and we're trying to solve some of the world's biggest problems. And I know that that's what you've been doing for probably 40 plus years. And so my question for you is, I know a lot of the people, they know who Superman is. Why? Because we've seen him on the TV. We've seen that S on the chest. But when the cameras are off and he goes home, a lot of the times what we don't really know how to describe is who is that Clark Kent on the backside. So my question for you is, people have seen you in publications. They've read articles. They've heard, your wisdom. But when there's no cameras on, take us back and tell us behind the scenes, who is that Clark Kent for Fred Moss?
Yeah, that's a really, really great question to start off with. I in some ways I feel like I'm an ultimate fit for this world. And in other ways, I feel like the ultimate misfit for this world. You know, that I came to the world as a joyful communicator. I came in order to bring peace and bring connection to the family that I was born into. And, I was given some blessings and some skills in my mind and my capacity to communicate and my capacity to bring people together. And, ultimately, when I'm sitting alone, I don't know how I got to be here. So it's sort of like, as the story you told me about your life, there's something like really riding with the wave and realizing and exploring and embracing both the pain and the beauty of this life and, wondering how and what I'm going to do next to make a difference and who I can count on and who I cannot count on and being disgusted and also being, somehow faithful and hopeful and using my communication skills. And then I just want to be, I just want peace, really. I just want peace and fun and love, and I want to play. And I feel like I'm still that 4-year-old who hasn't yet started kindergarten, and I can't wait to start kindergarten to see my friends and learn how to play and learn how to, communicate and be together and make the world a place that's useful. And boy, the weight of the world has been rough recently, so I'm feeling like I'm concerned and feeling like potentially squashed at times, and then at other times it's like, well, look, I'm still a dreamer and still creating all sorts of things with all sorts of people, including on this show this morning, and with that, it's somehow, okay, get up, take a shower, put one foot in front of the other, and see what today has to bring.
Yeah, no, and there's so much that I want to unpack there. But let me ask you, take it back. Talk to us a little bit about as you were growing up, because just like you said, everybody going off to kindergarten, and I shared with you, my wife and I, we just opened up daycare center. Today is the official day that we opened it up and it went live to our families. But obviously a lot of those kids, they're excited. There's an indoor playground set. So when they first walked in, it was almost like Disney World. But for you, as you were growing up, at what point did you start to see the world in a different place that you said, listen, I need to make change? Reason being is because when you're young, you don't see a lot of the negatives, you know, the negative aspects of it. At what point was that for you? Did something happen? Like, did you grow up in a family where you're like, hey, I have a lot of love, but then when I go to the outside world, it feels like that there's negative all day long? Or was it vice versa?
Well, I think there was a lot of love in my neighborhood, and there was enough love in my family. There was lots going on. I think the event that really, believe it or not, I think the event that really had me double check all of life was Kennedy being shot in the head. I think that that day on November 22nd, 1963, I was 5 years old. And when that happened, the world came, you know, you obviously weren't around, but when that happened, the world came to a standstill for a moment for all of us. And, you know, everyone had changed. And, you know, then shortly thereafter, within about 4 or 5 months, the Beatles arrived from Liverpool and on Ed Sullivan. And that was like, wow, there's this possibility of fun or love or peace or pursuit of things that matter. You know, my brothers were, I had two brothers, 10 and 14 years older than me. And they were activists and in different areas in the world of, when there was a lot of things going on, the war in Vietnam or different things happening in the revolutions of the 60s. And I was being dragged around by them and learning what the world had to offer, but and learning that I might have to take a stand. I was always tall. I was always really smart in school. I had a big mouth, so I was well known, and I was a pretty good athlete. And so I had things going on that it was like I knew I was being counted on to make a difference, and I could make a difference in many different directions. I could cause significant damage if I wanted to, or I could actually heal the people around me and bring joy, pleasure, and purpose. And I'd have to say that those events, you know, when I look at before the Kennedy assassination, it was a different world. But on November 22nd, when I came home from playing basketball and walked into the living room, and my parents were there crying their eyes out, watching this little black and white TV, and we, learned that the president was dead. And I was like, well, you know, I have a sore thumb. I think I jammed my thumb in a basketball that morning. And it's like, oh, there's stuff in the world that's bigger than me that needs some attention. And I wonder what I'm going to be called on to do. I think there was a space that if it was Clark Kent or just, you know, Fred Moss, there was a space where I wonder what I was going to be called on to do.
I love it. And you said this was when you were five? Wow. So the first thing that went through my mind is, wow, like us really not thinking about a child of how much that one moment, any significant moment at the age of five can really impact the rest of someone's life. Because we think, oh, they're so young, right? They won't remember, especially something like that if you didn't physically witness it, right? So you're kind of hearing the aftermath of the story. So you're like, oh, you know, someone passed away. But that's a big, big thing. I think anybody who has younger brothers and sisters or who is a mentor to someone, it's saying, hey, even though a child is 4 or 5 or 6 years old, still understand that what they're exposed to could really change their life for the good or for the bad is the takeaway that I got away from that. So still protect their mindset at all costs, because even though they're young, it could still be very detrimental if they don't see it in the right light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, you know, we're very impressionable is the word that I'm coming with, you know, the mm-hmm. idea that there wasn't much down, you know, other than just playing or, you know, figuring out which foods I liked or, you know, yanking around with my stuffed animals or my little sister or my playpen or, you know, catching naps or whatever I was doing, playing basketball, there wasn't that much there wasn't that much foundation laid down. And so when that event happened, I could tell that the world had skipped a beat, at least. And you know, I didn't know that it was as large as it was. I didn't know that when I say Kennedy assassination, literally 60 years later, everyone knows about the day I'm talking about. You know, I didn't know it was that big, but I knew it was big. You could, it was a big enough deal, you know. And, you know, these days, here we are 60 years later. And when, if anyone says Kennedy assassination, there's nobody out there who's going to wait, who's Kennedy? There's nobody who says that. 100% of us know who Kennedy was, at least in our own upbringing and history. And, going through an event like that, it really did lay down a brick in the ground, you know, a brick to walk on, or a hurdle, or a challenge, or an impactful event that certainly left me startled, and then maybe fortified or galvanized to think about what I could do in this world. Well, how can I make it a better place?
Yeah. No, and I definitely would say everyone would know, you know, at least for my generation and above, definitely knows who Kennedy is. Let me ask you this. So you, a lot of what I've heard is influence, right? You said when I was younger, even though probably in your teen years, you were a pretty good athlete, at those ages is where you're really trying to figure out who you want to be as a adult, right? As in, like, you're 16, 17 years old, but you know that right around the corner, you're going to be 18 and considered, quote unquote, an adult. And so at that time, you have a lot of influence of things of what you can do, especially if you're in sports. So my question is, what was the thing that grounded you to go right or left, whichever way you want to see it, of the positive route rather than the everything is all about me, society is all about me? Because I feel a lot of the times now people have that power, but they don't take it to the positive. This is why negative media travels, what, 5 times faster than positive media. So what was that thing for you? Was it your family still? Was it your church? Was it, you know, the sports team you were on? What held you grounded to go the positive route?
Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure. I think, you know, some things happened that sent me down a negative route, actually. And, you know, I had a girlfriend when I was 13 at camp, and we were inseparable, have a beautiful summer together. And then she died. She got killed 8 weeks after camp ended. And so one Sunday I woke up and I learned she was dead. And that event was, that was also another sort of brutal event. And, you know, that same year there was a lot of difficulties in my family. My dad was not in good health, and his business crashed, and, you know, there were riots in Detroit that year. I was growing up in Detroit, so the riot, I could see the city burning from my house. And there was a lot of surrender or despair that I experienced.
What was going through your mind as this is going on? Because 13 is a prime year now. You know, what's going through your mind as you're thinking all that? Is it just feel like, woe is me?
Now, more WTF for the most part, you know, wow, this is sort of where like misfit starts fitting in, that I have more pain now, you know, I have a lot of pain that I got to deal with, and then, it's not going to work out, or, I've had enough, or F this S, you know, and it's like, I think there was, you know, for me, there was I don't need to try so hard. I don't need to be in the front of the class. I don't need to be the best athlete. I don't, you know, I wasn't the best athlete, but I was a pretty good athlete. But I didn't care anymore about that. I think I fell off the wagon a little bit, and I liked smoking marijuana, and that was a real treat for me. It was a space where I could find some peace. I no longer spent very much time trying to be a great student. And I think more than anything, though, I continue to be fun. I think I let fun continue to drive me forward. So even if I was sneering or laughing at the society or laughing at people or giving up, there was something about bringing fun and intelligence and clear-headedness into the issues, and not being maybe it's not being like paying attention to corruption and paying attention to not being just led down dark alleys. Somehow exploring the world, every single point of the world that I could, and I have explored much of the world, but also doing so with some degree of rootedness, of skepticism, healthy skepticism, and that someday going through the world the way I was going, I would, someday it would all add up to making a positive difference. And I think that's where I've landed today, but it has been a pretty long ride through both dark and light times.
Yeah, no, and definitely. So my question is, what do you think as you went through this first phase where you were saying, you know, F this, W2F, like how much of that was your environment that you were in, and how much of it was the reason that you were, your same environment was the reason that you were able to make a change? Like, was all of your friends like, yeah, man, we don't need this. We don't need to deal with this. Or was it like, you felt at that time is where you became a misfit because everything was going right, but you started to take personal blows. So even though it looked like your community, your circle over here is still going right to the up and right, but you're taking all of these blows. So you start to go left because you're feeling like that you're maybe the unlucky one, or you're maybe, you know, mad at life. And then all of a sudden you feel like you're lost and you feel like you're ostracized in kind of that route.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I never, here and there I had episodes of being ostracized, but generally, I think because I had a pretty good sense of humor, and because I'm pretty smart and pretty vocal, and, you know, I keep myself out in front of the crowd, I don't ever think I went through a massive level of ostracization, but I think what I did was kind of check out. You know, I, again, in the world of, you know, I had a dog I really loved, and in the world of, again, I liked, whether it was staying out late at night or just riding my bike into areas that of the city that maybe I wasn't allowed to go, or hitchhiking in the areas of the city all the way downtown if I wanted to, just on my own. It was a matter of sort of surrendering and giving up and learning. Now, I had the aspiration to go to the University of Michigan, and somehow I was going to hang on to that through my teenage years. And I did end up going to the University of Michigan. And I fell in love with Ann Arbor, but Michigan, the university, kind of ate me up. So I dropped out a couple times. And it was really just, you know, trying to figure out how to take the next step that could be reparative, you know, that could allow me to stand in my true self. And it was not easy standing in my true self because I was living a life that was inconsistent with my true self in many ways. And, I only recently, after all these decades of life, do I now find myself speaking more of my truth, you know, like actually being me. I think I, you know, going to medical school, which is eventually I did go to medical school, and I'm a doctor for the last 32 years. It was an opportunity both to have an extremely powerful position in the community, but also to, you know, I'm asked to be something that might not necessarily actually be. I'm actually to stand for something that maybe my real self really is skeptical about. And as I backed out of medicine, as I started to, you know, no longer do conventional medicine, that's when I really found myself again and found my true voice. And actually today, as you're hearing me, it's much more the voice of that four-year-old than any time ever in my life. I'm just the same guy. I'm 60 years older than four. But in those 60 years, I've been around and seen a lot and tried this and tried that and tried faking this and faking that and, you know, tasting this and tasting that and going there and going there. And now I'm back to being that four-year-old with a wise vocabulary. And now the idea is to continue to source people to find their real selves and to find their true voice, because there's nothing more valuable than being authentic and being genuine. And that's what my, you know, that's who I am for the world now.
Yeah, there's so much power in that. Do you remember the event? Because going through medicine, obviously you put a lot of your life into studying and passing these exams, and then all of a sudden you pass and it's the best time of your life. You have the accolades, right? You're now accredited. You now have the recognition of he's a doctor. He's almost at the highest level that anyone could be, you know, outside of the president. What is that moment that makes you say, you know what, I have to put medicine behind me, at least the conventional route, and go my own? Like, what was that event?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I also went to school in Chicago. So I went downtown. I was in Northwestern downtown and 800 North. And that's where I was for 5 years. And that's where the school was. And I lived in Near North for the last 3 years of that. And when I got accepted to medical school, I realized that I was going to get a badge of honor and that I was going to have some sort of default power in the world, that if once I put MD at the back end of my name, people were going to have to listen to me. I was going to have to be like, all of a sudden I was going to have some street cred that was a whole different level than the cred I had already earned. And so medical school was also kind of a, you know, it was a challenge because what I was learning, and I already knew that what I was learning in medical school wasn't going to be what was applied in my world beyond. I love Chicago, but I didn't love medical school. I love the streets of Chicago all the way from the South Side, all the way up to, you know, all the way up into the North Burbs. And I think what, you know, I came out and now, and frankly, my story goes is that I was now medicating, you know, psychiatry became a medicating field while I was there. I went in so that I wouldn't have to medicate. And I came out and now have medicated, you know, in my career over 100,000 prescriptions that I've written. So this idea of writing prescriptions, like telling people that if you're uncomfortable, there must be something wrong with you, was never set for real with me. If you're uncomfortable, there's nothing wrong with you. This is called discomfort. That's what that is. And that's part of life. You don't need a doctor just because you're uncomfortable. If you're uncomfortable, congratulations. It's an uncomfortable world that we're in. And in 2006, I began to do things that doctors typically don't do. And that was when I had enough of the duplicity and decided that I would start taking people off of medicine and start really looking at people for what they are rather than some sort of simple diagnosis that I or some other doctor had given them. So I had some super success by doing that, taking people off their diagnosis, taking people off their medicine, and they got better. Reliably, they got better. And sometimes all their symptoms disappeared and they, you know, gained a new lease on life. They were expecting to be on medicines their whole life and have a diagnosis, and now they could walk out without a diagnosis and without any medicine and actually get their life back. And that was, I think, a really major turning point. I call that my true voice moment. And I began to be a healer. I began to, again, reinvest that connection, that human connection resonating with another person is the source and the foundation of all healing, of all conditions, of all types, everywhere. And funky as it is, that isn't how doctors see the world. And I had been taught to see the world differently. And so me saying, come on now, human connection is at the source of all healing, and having other people like, whoa, that's radical. I'm like, no, actually, that's not even radical at all. That's little 4-year-old Freddie talking still to a truth. Human connection is at the heart of all healing. Y'all know that just as well as I do. I mean, we learned that before we even started learning other things. So I have grown and developed into just knowing that at the bottom of the ocean, at the bottom of the pool, what we really want to do is just connect with other people and be heard for who we are. Once that happens, that's where massive, authentic, genuine, foundational healing occurs.
Yeah, so much wisdom right there. The first thing that I guess I was wondering is, as you said, 2006, you started to find things that you didn't feel set right with your soul that you were doing for your patients. Now, at this time, were you a part of someone else's practice or did you have your own practice?
No, I never was a part of anyone else's practice. I was all 32. I mean, that's not quite true. In 1991, for a couple of years, I was part of someone's practice. But once I broke away from that, 1993, let's say, I was always pretty much a sole practitioner. I had a practice other people were part of. I led a practice for a while, but then when I had 9 therapists working for me, but I took that down to 1 therapist, and then after that it was really just I would cross cover other doctors in Cincinnati where I was raising my family, and that's where my practice really grew. But for the most part, I was a sole practitioner.
Gotcha. And the reason why I asked this is because you said in 2006, you found yourself doing things that you didn't feel like sit right with your soul. Who influenced that? What I was trying to get at, I guess, for me was how much of this do you think was a part of the system of the way that you got your foundation built? I guess, let's say 92, 91, and maybe even the prior years, as opposed to, was it your beliefs that you should have been doing it this way and then you just flipped it? Or was it like, no, that's what my community was doing, so that's what I felt like I had to do.
No, it would be A more than B for sure. It's definitely not what my community was doing. I don't know anybody who did what I did. I still don't know anybody who did what I did as of this very day. I have no community.
So give us, because now I'm curious, and I'm sure somebody else is watching or listening. What are the things that were so bad that made you switch up a practice of what you've known for 10 to 12 years? What in 2006 did you feel was so bad? You're like, I can't keep doing this.
Psychiatry is a brutal field. I it just is. And, we go in there and we make judgments about people, about whether or not they're well enough to be considered like normal. And we don't have any clue who normal is. We medicate mm-hmm. people and drown them of their, not only their sorrows, but all of their emotions.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's a judgment. There's the stuff that happens behind closed doors in locked units, inpatient units, or nursing homes, or jails, or prisons, or rehab centers, or courtrooms that where psychiatry wields massive power. And sometimes I was signing off on orders that I knew were wrong, and when I realized that. I wasn't just complacently allowing this to go on, but if you ever look at the document in the future, someone will say, who signed off on this? And at the bottom of that, it'll be Dr. Fred Moss who signed off on it. So I wasn't just allowing it to happen. I was actually ordering it to happen. And that was where my soul was being sacrificed. Each and every time I would order something that was barbaric or counterintuitive or authoritarian or... Like,
what was the drive in that? Like, did you have a contract with like the government or somebody where you knew if you just signed off so many orders that you would get X amount of money? Or was it like, what was the driver?
It's just a job description. That's just what doctors do.
Gotcha.
You don't even have to read the chart. You just sign the chart. You just,
Wow.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of charts. You can't read them. You have to sign off on what was done.
Gotcha.
And wow. It's not just doctor. It's not just psychiatry. That's modern medicine. Mm-hmm. Now there'll be doctors out there who are listening and watch like, no, I read every chart. I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't. If you're busy, you don't, sometimes, and it's not like a lot of time, but enough times, someone would be secluded or someone get too much medicine. Or, someone be brought in by the legal system or by their parents and there'd be unfair. There'd be massive levels of inequity going on. And it would be difficult to stand in the middle and you sort of represent what I thought was true on the one hand and what the system was asking me to do on the other hand. And more frequently than not, the doctor does what the system is asking him to do. Mm-hmm. And that level of heart-wrenching soul sacrifice can take a toll. So sometime in 2006, there was other things going on in my personal world and in my professional world and my, you know, my marriage and my own personal health and my relationship with my daughter. And, you know, there were things going on that just went crash in 2006, sort of like 1971 when my girlfriend died, or was even 1963 when Kennedy got his head blown off. There's these events that happen, or these turning points in life where you're just like, well, I can't keep doing this anymore. Even if it means the end of my life, I can't keep doing this anymore. Like, I'm willing to, in 2006, it was like, well, I can't keep the masquerade going that I'm okay with all of this. So I'm going to have to start doing some things differently, or else go find a new job altogether and, you know, go, I don't know, do something else. It wasn't like I needed to be a doctor. I knew that I could go be a barista, or go travel the world, or go, you know, learn how to do computers or whatever else I needed to do. There was something like balls to the wall, like throwing it all in and taking a look at what really matters in my life. So it wasn't like I was following any crowd, that's for sure. It was I was breaking away from the crowd and doing what I knew was right, which was getting people better.
Yeah, no. And I appreciate you sharing that. I think that's huge for some people to hear, right? Because they either maybe have a family member, or maybe themselves have been, you know, a part of the system over the last couple of years, and they felt like they've been wrongfully medicated, or they've had a doctor who hasn't shown that interest in them. Right. And so now it's kind of that validation of, hey, I'm not really crazy, but just like you said, they've given me these drugs and they've mandated I take it, and it's drowned out not only my sorrows, but also my emotions as well. And now I'm feeling like a great transition and segue to it of, how do I find my voice again? Because I feel like everything I say, everything I do, people are already looking at me in a certain light that says that I'm crazy. So how do I find a way to speak up to let people know, no, I'm here, without having to be medicated, modern style?
Well, isn't that the challenge of life for these days, you know, and maybe the biggest challenge in the world? You know, the biggest threat in the world today is not what you think it is, after all. The biggest threat in the world today is not a virus. It's not climate change. It's not racism. It's not sex trafficking. It's not even war. The biggest threat in the world today is bigger than all of those. And all of those are the biggest threats we've ever seen. And each one of those in and of itself is a threat to all of humanity and threat to the entire planet. But there's one bigger than all that. And the bigger threat than all that is that we've given up on our voice. We've had our voice taken from us, or we've decided that we no longer need to speak, or that we're not going to be heard. And so we're quieted down now, and we're no longer speaking our true authentic self. And that's the biggest threat in the world, because all the problems that I just labeled, every one of them is going to need some authentic voice in order to deal with it. So the idea of, like, you know, it's sort of like having a fire is a problem. It's even bigger problem if there's no extinguisher anywhere. And that's what we're talking about. The extinguisher for any of these problems comes in one space, and that's in conversation and voice. And if we don't find our true voice, the future looks pretty freaking grim. And I think there's nobody here who would argue that the future looks grim if we don't speak together. And the idea is that maybe it's too little, too late. Maybe we're done speaking to each other. But it's another space where, well, what can I do to help people bring their true voice? And that is find my own true voice, be a role model, an authentic role model for speaking some degree of truth and the power of that, and being gentle when I hear other people's truth, even if the content is diametrically opposed to what it is that I say. So I don't need agreement from other people, but I really do ask for authenticity and genuine gentleness, if you will, a willingness to be accepting and forgiving and compassionate with another person, no matter what they're saying, even if it's 100% different than what I think I know. And that's what I now go through life being, is that the urgent, like the, you know, emergent nature of all of us coming together right now, like right now, with our true voice could never been more important and more overstated, you know, than it is right this very minute. And somehow maybe that's the reason I'm continuing to walk through the earth, you know, is that the idea of representing and then being that guy who helps others find their true voice. And that is the name of my new book, actually, you know, is Find Your True Voice. So that's not a that's not a coincidence that my book is called Find Your True Voice. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I want to come right back to that. But a question that I have on this is when we say about communicating with one another, I think from a surface level, everybody can understand that. Yes, we need to communicate. We need to have empathy. And a lot of times we even need to have some type of sympathy, but definitely empathy. And communication is such a powerful tool. But when you're talking about power, For let's say war, racism, things like that, there's a lot of people that already have built the system and come up in the system that they don't want to allow too much communication. Even you can find your true voice all day long, but if your true voice impedes on my power, I have to shut that down. So it's like, hey, I'm trying to talk to you. I'm trying to speak with you of how I feel. But, you know, in the back of your mind, yes, I understand that's how you feel. But your feelings could take away from something that I have and I'm not willing to give it up. So how do you go about that? I think that's where a lot of people get afraid to use their true voice. And me, I am somebody who I've always been very vocal. But I think that's where a lot of people, because they get afraid that they will be not only ostracized, like we said in the beginning, but they could also be reprimanded. They could have something taken from them to now. Not only are they just even keel, but now they're below. What would you say to that?
We live in difficult times. And it's very real what you said. And what's your choice? You know, what's your choice? If we don't talk, it's only going to get a little bit worse slowly but surely. The grass grows like that. You know, I have these ideas of, you know, soon our phone will start talking back to us. We don't even have to call it Siri or Alexa anymore. And our phone will just be telling us what to do and all that. And it's a matter of hanging on to what it is that we have to say. And look, true voice doesn't mean going in all sorts of dangerous areas and just screaming from the mountaintops what you know is right. It's not like that. You know, it's a matter of being steady with your own true voice and then using all the obstacles, the conditions of the game to make is what the largest difference that you can and to be authentic with yourself while you're doing so. You know, it's a temporary world that we're living in. There's only, there's 100 yards between each goal line. And there's just like, okay, that's the rules of the game. You know, they're not going to change that to 60 yards just because I don't want to go 100 yards to get to the goal line. It's 100 yards. That's how long it is to go from goal line to goal line. That's just how long it is. And there's some things in this world, some obstacles that are being set up or that have been here the whole time that are just conditions of the game. And I think you need to address that as being the obstacle is the way, if you will. You know, this it's a way of really walking through this. And, you know, Ryan Holiday said it as good as anybody. You know, it's the idea is that what's there in front of us has to be dealt with by either going over it, through it, or around it. And that's what's here. And can you wake up in the morning, realize that you've lived a full life up until now and that there are challenges here. Some of them will be insurmountable or appear insurmountable. And can you be creative? Can you bring your truth, your genuine, authentic, honest to goodness core message forward? And actually make a difference as a dreamer, make a difference as an impact creator. Can you do that? And sometimes I don't feel like I could do that, you know, and not even for a whole day. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, notoriously, I don't know how I'm going to get this shit done at all, you know, and then I have no idea. Like, it's a lot of pain. I have no idea how I'm going to get any of this done. And it's stacking up. And, you know, and then I get lucky enough to be honest or to be lucky, you know, be fortunate enough to have a group of men or a group of people who are like-minded in wanting to deliver goodness or beauty or truth into the world. And they're my friends, you know, they're the people that somehow I have earned to be my friends and colleagues, maybe like yourself. And then we just walk through the world holding hands, knowing this shit's going to be over someday soon. And in the meantime, we might as well play as hard and as good as we can and, you know, hit threes when they're available.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. And that's just like you said. I mean, I think that enough of us, we don't really take that into consideration that, like, listen, the game is already built, right? Like and I think a lot of the times if we know that going into it, we figure out how, like, for example, any game, let's use Monopoly, for example. We already know the ways of Monopoly. We know that you got to own property. Ideally, you want Boardwalk, Park Place. You want as much of that left hand, right hand, whichever side that that's on that you're sitting at the table. And you want to try to buy up real estate as quick as possible. But we know that going in, so that changes our strategy of how we have to play within the game, which is what you said. I think in life, we don't think about those things. We just kind of think of it as a blank canvas. And then we get a shocking revelation that all of a sudden we get hit in the face. And it's like, well, it shouldn't be like this. But it's like, but it was like this before you. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be like this after you. And there takes more than, even honestly, in my opinion only, it takes more than just the voice, one voice, to be able to, like you said, scream from the mountaintops. There's ways to go about doing things, and you have to figure out how you can be strategic about it. That means relationships to humanity, right? That means having political seats or people that are in your corner that have political seats. There's a lot more that plays into it. And then you just have to stay true to your heart and your message and get enough of those people to hear it and then become one of your friends that then they're willing to take a little bit of that risk of something that's already built.
Yeah. Yeah. You say it well, you know, it's there's some power in community, but these days, even the power in community is threatened. So this idea of us being able to assemble is becomes less and less possible. And then you have no idea whether the person next to you agrees with you on important issues or not. So you don't speak your truth for fear that you may even lose your, it can be someone, even your sibling, you know, even someone who's been your best friend. Those relationships get shaken inside of how you say any particular one thing. If you use the wrong word or the wrong phrase, I don't even know, you know, and sometimes we don't even know, like, you know, I could inadvertently say something on this podcast where you, maybe not you, but a listener would be like, I really thought that Dr. Moss was cool and Castillo said that, and now I think he's a total a-hole, you know, and it's like, I was cool, and then I said something I didn't even know that I said, and now you listen to me, and you're like, wow, I thought he was cool, and then he said that, and now I discard everything about him. And these are funky times, man. I mean, you just...
That's cancel culture in itself right there. You can be canceled that quickly. And that's where, again, I think what I hear and the wisdom that I've learned from this and the validation is you just really, at the end of the day, you have to stay true to who you are, because at the end of the day, if you're trying to make everyone else happy, right, you want to just be able to speak your truth, because it's not possible. Everyone's ready to point the finger at someone else, and you have to stay true to who you are and find those people who are looking for, like you said early on, peace. Right. There's not, I know that in our small circle or the people that we see in the media, it can look like everybody wants chaos, but that's not the truth. Right. It's just those people get a spotlight put on them, and even for a short amount of time. But there's more people out there that want peace, that want serenity, I would say. And if you can find enough of those people, which would be considered your tribe, that's the way that you really continue to put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, it's a challenge, you know. It's never been more challenging than it is right now, but it's never been more urgent either. And for people who have been around the block, I'd say both you and I have been around the block in our own ways. The challenge or the onus or the responsibility, the accountability, is to walk with that truth, including during the moments where you are not being your truth. You know, like. Every day, you know, you get seduced into, like, all of a sudden I just spent, let's say, 40 minutes scrolling Facebook that I can't stand or something. You know, it's like, oh, let me do it one more minute, or, you know, get a bump of dopamine or something like that. And or, you know, you find yourself drinking too much, or you find yourself hurting a loved one, or you find yourself sleeping in or missing an appointment or spending too much money or eating too much food. There's, you know, in that situation, there's something about being very compassionate with one's humanity, like giving myself a break, like, okay, it actually can reset right now. I can reset right now. It's like, if I ate too much food this morning, or I slept in, or I hurt somebody, which I didn't do, by the way, any of those things. But if I did, there'd be an opportunity to step up right now and reset starting right this moment, like come in touch with my real self as best as I can, maybe sit for a second, take a new perspective or form or revitalize or renew my perspective and then give it another try. You know, some sort of reason we're still here. That's what, you know, some sort of reason we're still here. And I don't know that reason either. It's like, sometimes I wonder how and why that happened, but some sort of reason I'm still here. So I guess I'm here to make a difference still. And I might as well step up and say what I need to say and listen carefully to what's being said around me.
Yeah, no, this is definitely so much wisdom. This has been a phenomenal conversation. I want to ask you, for anybody who's listening right now, still rocking with us, they're watching right now even, and they're saying, okay, I understand that he's been able to do it, but for me, I'm still struggling with this. And they have that little voice in their head, and that little voice, we've all heard it. It says that they're not strong enough, they're not smart enough, or maybe they don't have enough resources. What's the one thing that you would leave that person with to get them to just take action?
Well, none of us are strong enough, and none of us know what the hell is happening here. And the fact that you don't know is no different. You're no different than Grant Cardone or, you know, Jack Canfield or Michalowicz or me or Casanova or anyone. I mean, we don't know. We don't know anything. None of us know anything. Some of us look like we know, and some of us carry it off pretty well as if we got a clue of what's happening in the world. But we really don't know. And you join the crowd of those of us who don't know. And then with respect to finding true voice, what's really great about that is it's always here with you, that you know your truth. You don't need to go move to Tibet or live in a cave or sit under a Bodhi tree. You don't need to do that. You don't need to walk across America. You can do all those things, and that's cool. But the truth is, your truth is right there with you, and you're familiar with it. You know what your truth is. So the two things I would say to your listeners is, number one, you know, take incremental changes. Like in your next conversation with a loved one or someone, even if it's just a barista, speak your truth just a slightly more. Like actually get a little bit closer to what matters to you. Continue to walk closer to your truth, respecting the fact that maybe your truth isn't welcome in every setting. That's real. You speak your truth in some settings, you're going to get canceled or censored or ostracized and disappointed or maybe heartbroken, even hurt or reprimanded, like you said. So you don't have to do it everywhere. That's part of true voice, is figuring out where it's wanted and needed. So take incremental changes. But the second thing, and I think in the end, this is what's, this is the go-to these days for me, and I didn't make this up at all, and that is, go be of service. Go help anybody do anything. Go help anybody do anything. Help anybody do anything. And then watch what happens in your life when you're truly helping another person do anything. Because there is a warmth and growth and steadiness and grounding and foundational purpose that arises from sheer service that is impossible to explain until you're in it. Like if you're in service in order to make money, or if you're in service in order to be liked, that's not the same thing as service. In service, what you're doing is helping someone do anything, helping anybody do anything, and that can bring you out of a whole lot of pain or a whole lot of confusion. While you're doing it, there's a refortification, a revitalization, a growth, a receding, of general human functionality when you're helping somebody do anything. And I think that's what I would say for those folks who feel like they're behind the eight ball or didn't, you know, aren't as fortunate as me, or from some godly reason you think that, then helping anybody do anything is the number one thing. And number two, you know, make sure you're incrementally growing in the authenticity of your conversations with others.
Absolutely. Again, so much wisdom, Dr. Moss. This has been a phenomenal conversation, and I want to be the first one, if no one else has told you today, to say thank you and I appreciate you. We're going to make sure that we put all of the links in the show notes to your website and any movements that you're a part of. But tell us, if anybody wants to stay directly connected with you, tell us, where can they find you at?
Yeah. So there's a couple places. The first one is I'm my book. You know, my book is Find Your True Voice, and it's a fun book. It takes a deeper dive into what I'm saying here about the necessity and some methodologies to actually come in touch with your true self. And I'm going to give a free copy to your listeners. So an actual book I'll send to them, and I'll even pick up shipping. The findyourtruevoicebook.com. That's called findyourtruevoicebook.com. And then I have this summit that I think I'm familiar with. You might be familiar with. It's called the We the People Summit. And the We the People Summit is gathered and assembled several pretty high level inspirational influencers who are helping us really find our true voice in conversations that you're having with me. So that's at wethepeoplesummit.online. It's a free summit. And from there, we're accepting donations, and we're on our way to raising $1 million for those people who have been war torn and devastated and disrupted in Ukraine. And then there's my podcast as well. So there's Welcome to Humanity podcast. That's my brand name, is Welcome to Humanity, self-explanatory. And also, I like, you know, doing expert speaking. So, small groups or medium sized or large groups, everyone needs to get a little bit of an injection into what it takes now to bring our true voice forward. Finally, if you really just want to touch base with me, you can find me at my website, which is welcometohumanity.net, or email me directly at drfred@welcometohumanity.net. And I'll be sure to get back to you and see what we can do to make a difference in your world.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. I appreciate all of your time. And remember, Dream Builder, just as he said, everyone has a dream, but you got to be willing to take some action on it, right? You got to be able to even just take those incremental steps to get your action, because without any action, that dream that you have, and we all have a dream, it will only merely be a fantasy. That's all for this one. We'll catch you on the next one. That's all we got for this episode. Thank you for sticking around. That truly means a lot to me, and hopefully that means that we delivered massive value on this one. If you haven't already, the way that you could say thank you to myself and the team is just by heading over to iTunes and leaving a review and a rating. That's what iTunes loves to see. That's how we get out there even more. And I would definitely be grateful for it. I know the team would as well. Do me a favor and head on over to dreamnationpodcast.com. That's where you're going to be able to find all of the resources that we talked about in today's episode, as well as more exclusive content. And you'll also be able to sign up to our email list, where we have more exclusive content. And we always love to hear the feedback from you all, because you're our tribe.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. So remember, in the dream we trust, we'll see you on the flip side.